Hard Place, a novel by R.A. Jacobson. Listener discretion is advised. Contains strong language, violence, and some adult situations. Chapter 19. Matt sees Alan on a table. The old police station had had a recent renovation. Great blocks of glass and steel had been rammed into the once majestic building of stone and brick. It had been raped by the modern aesthetic that expelled warmth and demanded cold, empty spaces. Matt walked across the crisp marble, each footfall echoing loudly around him. Behind a long counter that looked as if it had been carved from a single block of white stone, a young, clean-shaven man stood expectantly. He had a hint of arrogant impatience, as many young police officers had. Matt supposed he had been the same. It was a way of excluding themselves from civilians, giving them a sense of superiority. "My name's Matt Pierce. I'm looking for Constable Kowalski." After an extended pause, the young cop looked down at his screen, typed on the keyboard, then reached for the phone. He spoke quickly and quietly, hung up, and spoke to Matt. "Please wait." He looked back to his computer screen, Matt forgotten, no longer important enough to consider. "Okay, thanks," Matt said to the air. He looked around the empty space for somewhere to sit, but sitting to wait wasn't something done here. He walked to the glass and looked out at the empty street. An occasional car and a few taxis, but no one passed on foot. A half an hour later, he heard the commanding stride of heavy boots. He turned to see a small, dark woman dressed in a hoodie and jeans with a severe haircut and a no-nonsense look on her face. She was more than pretty, with high cheekbones and clear, intelligent eyes, but the fuck-off that blazed in those eyes made Matt tone down his smile. She thrust out her hand. "Mr. Pierce?" "Yes." "Please come this way." She turned on her heel and marched away. "When was the last time you saw your partner?" she asked as she led him down a bleak hallway to a small, sterile office. The room didn't appear to belong to anyone. There was nothing personal about it, no photos, no objects. It was generic. "Alan? Not sure. Tuesday afternoon, I guess." "Tuesday afternoon. Are you positive?" "Well, yeah. I came back to the office around 11, maybe 11:30. I made a few calls before he came in, so maybe 12:30. "Okay. And that was the last time you saw him?" "Yes. I spoke to him later the day on the phone, maybe around 3.
"3.
"Yeah, I think so. What's this all about? Is Alan in some kind of trouble?" Constable Kowalski began to answer when Matt's phone rang, cutting her off.
"Perhaps you should shut that off during the interview."
She leaned back in her chair, crossing her arms, her pissed-off face now mixing with the fuck-off look she maintained. Matt looked at the screen. "It's Alan." He turned the screen for her to see the caller ID. She leaned forward, her fuck-off face slipping away for a second, replaced with curiosity.
"Well, you better answer it then."
Matt turned the phone around and answered it.
"Hello? Alan? Alan? Where are you? I've been trying to get a hold of you all week. What the hell's going on? I'm at the police station."
"Hey, Matt. Sorry, it's been a weird few days. I need to talk to you right away. Can you meet me behind the Aturian Lounge?"
There was a long pause. Then Alan said,
"Wait, did you say a police station?"
"Yeah, what's going on?"
Matt could hear the strangeness in Alan's voice.
"Shit. Okay. I'll tell you everything. Just meet me. Come on your own. I don't think I have much time."
"Okay, I..."
Matt stopped. Alan had already hung up.
"What did he say?"
Constable Kowalski was leaning forward.
"He wants to meet me. He sounded odd. Maybe you can tell me what's happening."
She leaned back in her chair and appraised him.
"Yes, but first follow me. I think you need to see something."
She stood and marched out of the office. She was a head shorter than him, but her stride was hard to match. They walked down the hallway to a singular elevator. When it arrived, she turned and pushed the B button and stepped back again, stiffly staring ahead at her own reflection, ignoring him. No music, just their breathing. Matt fidgeted.
"I always thought you kept the morgue in the basement," Matt chuckled.
She glanced at him, not smiling, her fuck-off face in full mode. That's right. His smile withered.
Oh.
The ride seemed to take forever. The doors opened with a low hiss on a long, wide hallway, heavy with quiet. The type of place Matt felt he needed to whisper. Constable Kowalski stepped from the elevator, her boots clumping on the tiled floor. At the end of the hallway, she went through a set of large metal doors with "Morgue" written on a small plaque at shoulder height. Matt followed a couple of steps behind. The room was vast, filled with cool air, making it feel like a large fridge. Every surface was stainless steel or tile. There were 6 tables lined up with hoses and pipes interlaced on the wall behind them. They all stood empty except for one. It was the sheet-covered form that caught Matt's eyes and held them. He didn't want to be here. There was no odor, but Matt didn't like the smell. He had always had an aversion to dead bodies. A large man in a spotless white coat stood beside the table. Constable Kowalski stopped across from him. "Why am I here?" Matt asked. He had a bad feeling and he didn't want to see any more. "I need you to explain something to me." She glanced at the pathologist and nodded. With a gesture, the man leaned forward and pulled the sheet back. It stuck slightly, making a tearing Velcro sound as it pulled away, exposing the head and shoulders of a man without skin. At first, Matt wasn't sure what he was looking at. When he realized, his stomach reeled. The corpse was a dark, glistening mass with yellowy bone showing through the meat in places. His eyes were wide, lifeless and flat, with no eyelids to close. He thought of the slabs of meat hanging in his butcher's window. Matt staggered back, queasy. "What the fuck? Why? Who's that?" Constable Kowalski scrutinized Matt. "Based on DNA and dental records, that stack of meat and bone on the slab is what is left of your partner, Alan Cole."
"What the fuck are you talking about? How can that be? I just spoke to him."
Matt did his best to look anywhere but at the disturbing sight, but his eyes kept being drawn back to the mess on the table before him. The eyes kept pulling him. They tugged at him. They were Alan's. Even dried and flat, he recognized them. He felt bile rise in his throat. He willed himself not to throw up. "Well, we would be interested in finding out that as well. Someone skinned him. And it appears they skinned him while he was still alive." Matt turned from the table, breathing hard. Over his shoulder, he said,
"How can that be? Who did I speak to? I don't understand. How can this be Alan? How can he be calling me?"
Constable Kowalski glanced at the pathologist and nodded. He replaced the cover over the corpse. "He can't be. That's something I would like to find out. We need to know who's impersonating him. When are you supposed to be meeting him?" Matt stared at her, glanced briefly at the sheet, now that it hid the horror that once was his partner. In an hour behind the Aturian Lounge, he said.
Chapter 20. This Scarred Guitar. Standing in the confusing morass of objects, John realized there was the same hum he had heard before entering. It was more felt than heard. It was a sound of a potential lover in the next motel room. One drink, one thin wall away. It washed over him. It touched him in a way he'd believed he would never be touched again. He listened, leaned back, basking in the warmth of it. As he stood there, he became aware of the call coming from the window display. It was the guitar calling him. He could feel it hum like some holy woman or bruja, conjuring spirits out of a mantra and a basket of dried herbs. He looked at the guitar and noted it had lived a rougher life than he'd initially suspected. The back was scarred as if someone had taken a knife or a hatchet to it. It bore the scars of violence, but John only saw it as beautiful. It had experienced life in all its darkness and despair. He could see past the scars to the beauty he had first felt. They were incorporated into the beauty of the instrument. This maimed guitar was like a drunken master dancing across the sawdust floor, mystifying the young boys while he charmed their fickle rosebud gals.
Chapter 21, Young Jacob Makes His Deal. It was midnight at the crossroads. There was no moon. Overhead, the stars looked down on him. In the distance, he could see a few farm lights. To the south, a soft glow past the horizon was the far-off city. It was June, but it didn't feel like it. The air had a chill to it. Jacob stood alone in the dark, shivering, wishing he had worn a coat. He was 17 and feeling like a fool. In fact, he was sure he was a fool, just a stupid, gullible kid. He half expected his friends to pop up laughing at him for believing in the stories about the devil. Oh yeah, Jacob, Sam's brother did it and got all kinds of money. Their voices were full of wonder as they confided this massive secret that was no secret at all. Everyone had heard the stories of the judge and his deals. So here he stood in the dark, waiting for the judge to roll up in a shiny dark car and grant him his deepest wish. Jacob barked a short, bitter laugh. Yep, he was a fool. He was absolutely sure it was a stupid joke, a joke he swallowed hook, line, and sinker. He shoved his hands into his jeans pocket, resigned, head down. He cursed himself for believing in such a stupid idea and started for home. He was so fucking gullible. From behind him, the sound of tires on pavement, and his shadow raced out in front of him as headlights flared to life. He spun as a long black car that hadn't been there a second ago pulled up beside him. It reflected the stars, twisting them across its glossy surface as it slowed and stopped. In the smoked side window, Jacob looked at his own terrified face. The driver's door opened, and an exceptionally tall man in a black suit slid out. With effortless grace and a chrome smile, he strolled up to Jacob. His eyes were as black as a shark's. They held no humanity, no warmth, no compassion, only a predatory gleam. "Jacob, my boy! How are you this fine evening?"
"Sir, I'm doing just fine."
With a chuckle, "Well, shit or get off the pot, son. You're here. You called. What can I do you for?"
"Well, sir, there's this girl."
"Shit, boy, there's always a girl. What do you want?"
"Well, sir, I need a truck to take her to the graduation."
"A truck? That's it? Just a truck? You know my price, and all you want is a truck?"
"Yes, sir."
The judge grinned. "Done!" And he extended his hand to Jacob.
"Don't you want some blood or something?"
"Oh, no, Jacob, I trust you. Just a handshake and we're good." They shook. A noise like a snapping of twig behind Jacob turned his attention. When he looked back, the man was in the car. But it wasn't the same car as before. This car Jacob recognized. It was a black 1968 GTO. On the front quarter panel, written in round, playful letters, was "The Judge." "Son, you go home now," the judge said through the open window.
"And my truck?"
"I'll be seeing you."
With a wave, the judge roared off with a big V8 growling, back tires howling as he left black marks on the pavement. Jacob stood alone in the dark and watched the taillights shrink until he disappeared altogether. He looked down the black highway, once again feeling like a fool. Well, fuck. What the hell was that all about? An engine exploded to life right behind Jacob, startling him. He stared for a long moment, hardly believing his eyes. There stood a red 1977 Chevy truck, glossy and new.
So not a trick, or a joke, but real after all.
This is what he gave away his soul for. This was his prize. The judge was real. If the judge was real, then did he just sell his soul? He thought for a minute. He felt nothing different for a man without a soul. Shouldn't he feel the loss? Everyone seemed to think it was a huge deal to lose your soul, and yet he didn't feel any different. Maybe the judge collected the soul at the end of the contract? He didn't know how long his contract was. It could be a day, a year, or his entire life. He supposed he should have asked. In fact, there are all kinds of questions popping into his mind. He had come to the crossroads to make a deal, half believing it was a joke, and hadn't thought it through. Was he still himself, the same as before, or was he a demon of some kind? Was his life now shorter? Could he still love as he had? He thought of Mary Lou and his heart soared. Yes, he still loved her. She was the one, and he had given up something for her happiness. Jacob ran his hand along the fender, a grin on his face. It was perfect, and it was his. Mary Lou was going to flip. Jacob pulled the door open and slid on the black vinyl seat. He rubbed the steering wheel as he admired the dash. Man, this is amazing. Well, thank you, a voice said in Jacob's head. What the fuck? Who said that? He looked around for the source of the voice. That would be me, came the calm reply. Who? Where are you? Jacob looked around wildly. You're sitting in me.
What? The truck?
Yep.
You're a talking truck.
Only to you. Just one of my many fine options, thanks to the judge.
Holy shit!
Yep, holy shit indeed. It's a pleasure to meet you, Jacob. You can call me Clyde.
Oh. Oh, yeah, nice to meet you. Clyde. What are you?
Well, Jacob, I'm a second-level demon possessing this truck, and I am now tied to you through our contract.
Our contract?
Yes, Jacob, you just made a contract with a judge, and I'm part of it. As I understand the contract, there are several clauses that are in effect. We can communicate, though only you can hear me. You get hurt, I show damage, and if I'm damaged, you get hurt. The only part of this is that our contract is non-standard.
That's the only unusual part of this?
Well, I suppose it's all a bit weird.
You think?
But being non-standard does seem a bit odd.
I never signed a contract or nothing.
No signature would be required. All you had to do was to accept me, which you did by climbing in.
Fuck it! Let's go! Do I drive or do you?
Oh, I cannot drive. I have many capabilities, but that's not one of them. Well, don't that just beat all?
Cool!
Jacob stomped on the gas and tore away into the dark. The night of the prom, Jacob sat in Clyde's cab on crisp black vinyl, in the first and the last suit he would ever own. Mary Lou had sounded odd earlier on the phone, but seemed excited about the prom and even meeting Clyde. He wished he could have kept Clyde a secret from her until tonight, but he couldn't resist showing off. He had driven to the school, and everyone knew about what he had done. He had strutted down the hallway, basking in the acclaim. But when he met Mary Lou outside math class, she didn't seem too excited. Maybe even pissed off. The bell had interrupted their conversation, but they agreed she would meet Clyde when he picked her up for the prom. Jacob couldn't figure out what was going on with her. She hadn't been to school for most part of a week and seemed distracted and distant. Turned the corner, excited to see her standing outside of the house waiting for him in a long, beautiful blue dress. Beside Jacob, on the seat where she would soon be, was a flower for her wrist. The stereo came on, loud and blaring. Jacob reached for the eject button on the 8-track player when Clyde's engine roared and the steering wheel was torn from his hand. He felt a sickening thump and Clyde bounced once, then stopped. Later, much later, after the cops and all the questions, it was determined the truck's steering linkage had been faulty
And it was just a terrible, tragic accident that took Mary Lou's life on prom night. Jacob, his wrist broken from the spinning steering wheel, was cleared of all wrongdoing. However, many in the town still thought he was no good and had gotten away with it. Some people knew about his deal. Most knew he had loved her. And Jacob loved her still. Stories from a Hard Place is a narrative podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, R.A. Jacobson presents another chapter from Hard Place, read by the author. Opening music by Noah Zacharin. Production copyright by R.A. Jacobson, 2022. If you'd like to support Stories from a Hard Place, please go to patreon.com/hardplace. If you would like a book version, either ebook or print, you can find it anywhere books are sold, including your local library. You can find links to all these and much more at Dead Cat Studio. That's deadcatstud.io. Thanks for listening. Keep the shiny side up.